It's going to be for the bonus feed, so we could go as long as we want. We can say anything we want. We're free here, boys. We're in the ball pit of the carnival. Anything goes.
Bush
here.
Did 9/11.
Yeah, Bush did 9/11. Obviously, I say that on the main feed.
Yeah, I was going to say. I'm pretty sure I've heard you say that before.
What's the term they used? They let it happen on purpose. They made it happen or something? They let it happen versus they made it happen. That's like the sort of weird framework of how to talk about 9/11, right. This conspiracy. Right. And there's like a whole acronym. I don't know.
I don't know shit about that. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We'll do that. We'll do a 9/11 tape one day. Controlled demolition. Fellas, you both have been on the show. You're both returning guests. You're both friends of the show. Most people will know you, I imagine. Maybe if they don't, but maybe just introduce yourselves and remind anyone who you are and, you know, your previous episodes.
Sure. Yeah. I'll start. I'm Mo. I'm an attorney. I did an episode with Sina talking about farming and global food issues, essentially, and imperialism.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. Turnip Greens Radio.
Yep.
Any new episodes? I haven't checked in a while.
We haven't been recording as much lately. We might get back to it someday, but
okay,
life's getting busy.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Ian, people know you, baby, but you were just recently on, but
right,
in case
right,
they
fair.
Missed your episode.
Hey, so I'm Ian Anderson. I'm a Clemson grad, and I have recently set up the Anti-Imperialist Archive with you. I actually serve. That's my job. I serve food, so not super glamorous on this end.
And this episode has been we're what are we doing today, fellas? We're doing an episode. I think I'm calling it gaming and empire, or gaming empire or gaming imperialism. I don't know what else to call it, but essentially, it was spurred on. I'm gonna turn. Oh wait, I think my door's open. Hold on, I'm gonna close this door. I'm a professional.
I can hear you shuffling across the floor.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep that in the podcast. The whatever you guys shuffle. Are saying. So this was spurred on by this recent game with an obvious. Was it? I can't remember what game it was. Was it Call of Duty?
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 has an entire starting mission as a kind of kayfabe mock-up of the American military killing. General Soleimani, and so the game
Gorbani is they changed the name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They call him Gorbani. Can you believe that?
Ridiculous. Yes.
I'm eyes on.
What do you see?
Armed personnel, armor and hardware, all Russian.
What the hell are the Russians doing with Gorbani?
Supplying Iran. It's an arms deal.
You copying the Shadow One?
Affirmative. Two birds, one stone.
We need positive ID on Gorbani before we kick this off, boys.
Ghost, can you identify the general?
Armed escorts around one VIP. Russians are very happy to see him.
It'll be the last time they do.
They then have you chasing his successor for him across the world, I think from like Mexico to Spain, then to Chicago, as he is planning to launch stolen ICBMs into Washington, D.C.
We don't need to steal any. We make them.
Yes. I can't believe he ends up in Chicago. That's
the very last part of the game as you playing in suburbs, like hunting him down.
Oh yeah,
they have to justify their you know, mock-ups of the city of Chicago and, you know, all the military drills that they do. They got justified because it's certainly not going to be used against black people, right? It's like, it's going to be used against some Iranian Quds Force general suddenly being there.
Right. He's been smuggled into the country, or he's on some, like, diplomatic mission and somehow manages to be in there, you know, totally.
So, I mean, I had known, obviously, that video games are a big sort of site of imperial kind of ideological war, right? Obviously, it's like it's a pillar of the U.S. culture. So, like, just I think on this show, we're, you know, we talk a lot about these, whatever, like, big historical things, and people come with their books and stuff. So, like, this is kind of more lowbrow. Not that I don't do other lowbrow stuff. But if we call it what it is, that this is mass culture. Right, that this is like, this is what mass culture is today, which is video games.
Well, that, like, hang on, right? Like there's this whole, like, ongoing, like, idea about how, like, video games are also art that fit into this kind of similar structure as films or books or music, right? Where these games can be interpreted as like a long form piece of work from a artist or a collective, right? And so then you look at something like the Metal Gear series, and I mean that's a whole, like, wormhole on its own, but that alone kind of, like, sets the stage or the tone for something that actually could be considered art, right?
Well, so, you know, the artness of it, like, I would say, like, so there's a couple of things, which is, like, the evolution of video games obviously comes from a kind of narrative evolution, like a formal evolution of, like, stories and, like, novels and, like, and the combination between, like, the visual and audio and music, and, like, these are kind of, like, total art forms in a sense, right? Like, they're operatic video games, which is to say that they incorporate all of these different media into these kind of self-enclosed digital environs. Then you have, like, the overlay of the plots onto these things, so you have, like, this story element that you, like, kind of run through. That's where I feel that, like, this is where the kind of practice of critique can kind of, and, like, you know, sort of, you know, taking up the question of, like, how Americans kind of imagine their empire, like, this is where we really have to sort of go into and, like, kind of take apart, because we know that, like, in the wake of, like, 9/11, for instance, there was this, like, insane, like, just orgy of, like, you know, cultural hate towards Arabs and Muslims and all this stuff. And it was, like, concomitant with, like, news culture and everything on the radio and everything. But video games were still not in their infancy, I would say, but, like, they were, I guess the speed of the turnaround of the game is different. I mean, I guess there's a bunch of different things that we can get into,
that time existed in a space that was almost kind of separate, where it was more of a nerds domain, guys that, they, like, spent massive amount of time on
but
their
PC. But there were
a
ton of those, like, do you guys remember those, like, Flash games that came out?
Flash games.
There were tons of incredibly racist games where you're just, like, shooting Arabs in the head. Like, I still remember that.
One of the things that you asked me to find was, like, a number of, like, videos, right? And do you mind if I share one of those now?
No, that's fine. We can play it. Yeah. Which one? The MSNBC?
Yes.
Okay. Quest for Saddam.
Want to catch Saddam Hussein? Well, a very popular new video game allows you to do just that. The reality-based game features many funny scenarios. And joining us right now from Sacramento is Jesse Petrilla. He is the video game designer who, at just age 18, created the wildly successful Quest for Al-Qaeda game. Jesse is now back with this new product in which players get down to hunt the former dictator of Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Alex. It's good to be here.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been laughing every time we've been playing this. So behind the scenes, you can't hear me, but the homino. I mean, it's great.
Oh, yeah, it appeals to such a broad audience. Everybody can play it, first-time gamers. If you've never played a video game before, this is for you. This is the one to try.
There was a game called Quest for Saddam that, like, came out in 2003 during the invasion, and you had this incredibly just stupid woman that is like playing it up. She has no idea what she's even talking about. Literally the entire point of the like interview with this guy is just to promote like hatred towards Iraqi people, regardless of whether it's like specifically about him, right? Regardless of whether it's about actually Saddam Hussein.
Jesse, you know, despite your calling me a dork, I said earlier that I think you must be one clever guy. I mean, this is really good stuff. There's good humor in it. Where did you get it all from?
Oh, it's the we actually had a really good team of professionals working on this game. It's a lot more advanced than my last game that I made, which was Quest for Al Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's more advanced. It's got one-liners like where it's a coalition of characters in it. The players got multiple personalities and their celebrity voices. Like, it's got Sean Connery. I can't do a Sean Connery, but he goes, "Do you know the difference between falafel?" Do you know the difference between the Republican Guard and falafel? And falafel has killed more people.
Oh, man.
Like at that point in time, he was an irrelevant man, right? Like he was meaningless. The entire point was just to like have another piece of media that was about promoting the war.
Well, like that's the thing, like mass culture and empire, how do they interact, right? Like what is the grammar of that interaction? Like what's the language? What's the like whatever metaphor you want to pick? And I think that's the kind of question I want to turn over today, because American culture is insanely violent and it's insanely imperialist. And we don't think of it in those terms because we just think like, oh, it's normal, right? But like you have like an array of like incredibly racist, Islamophobic, anti-Palestinian voices on like mainstream channel, right? Like Bill Maher or whatever, right? Like any number, Tucker Carlson, like any of the mainstream news people, any of the CNN anchors, right? Like the human sort of news apparatus of the US is so blatantly imperial, but like that's only a tiny portion of the US like culture, right? Like of like mass culture that, the far more people are playing video games and spending their time doing video games. So that like, it's, I guess this is my way of kind of opening up this conversation and being like, do we take video games seriously enough as like cultural criticism at the level of kind of cultural criticism, or is it left largely, I think the answer is the latter. This is the answer, that it's still left largely to the consumers of it and like the connoisseurs of it. Right, that it's like that the people who are consuming it are the ones who are talking about it mostly, whereas like the intellectual class, it's like too low for them, right? That like the Marxist, the angry Marxist or whatever, like the standard people who kind of critique U.S. empire, it's not, they don't know what like Call of Duty 50,000, you know, semicolon like, you know, like Backwater Edition, like there's so many games, that's the thing, there's 50 right. billion games. You have to kind of know your way around. Like the last time I was playing video games, like seriously, although Mo and I did play PUBG, which we should talk about at one point. We still should. If people want to join our PUBG team, just write me if you're very good. If you're bad, don't join. We already have one black player and that's me. But like I feel that like the having more serious conversations about gaming and empire can like, is a good start at least for figuring out like how do they get these kids to join the military? Like this is a huge recruitment tool.
So on that, right? Like this was actually one of the like outset parts of like what the FPS was supposed to be about, right? I think back as far as like 2005, the FPS, like the first person shooter, had been out for years, like at least 10 Doom, plus years. I mean, you have Doom, right, and like GoldenEye, right? But these were all JPEG to hell. I mean, you can barely play GoldenEye now. I think like Perfect Dark is another option, right? But it started off as this like U.S. military funded America's army, right? And so then it branched out further from there as soon as Call of Duty 4 really took off. This was where the like nexus of like the FPS shooter really came into view, you have things stemming from there where like the games themselves had to buy like licensing fees. Well, sorry, pay licensing fees from these weapons manufacturers to use their likeness. So like there's the Galil in like every other Call of Duty game. Well, that's a gun that is made by Israeli weapons manufacturers, right? So every time that you purchase a Call of Duty game, that is effectively putting some amount of dollars and cents into the pockets of like Israeli weapons manufacturers who then of course use that to like fund research on like testing weapons out on like Palestine and Gaza.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty disturbing. A lot of these games are straight up funded by, you know, the military as well, and you know, the military industrial complex and Department of Defense and the State Department. It's pretty insane, especially these like Call of Duty games.
My favorite wormhole of this is the I think I spoke to you about this before, the Kuma Games deal. This was a first person shooter that was, I think, out as like in the late 2000s. And so the really interesting part about it was that it had something like 120 odd missions. Each one was based on some real battle, some real thing that happened in the Middle East primarily, right? And so with each mission, they had this massive archive of documents, of like actual files, movies, audio clips, things from the region, from the battle, that like gave you more information about it. So these also were coincidentally timed to be like days or even like hours or days after any given battle happened. For example, there was a mission based around the occupation and the bombing of Fallujah. You have the raid on Osama bin Laden. And one of the very last missions that they ever put out was around the murder of Libya's own
Gaddafi. Yeah.
Right. Sorry. So the deal was the Kuma Games also did work with DARPA and the military. They were developing language learning software to help military guys learn how to pick up different languages from the region. I think like Sorani, you have Kurmanji, various dialects of Arabic, things of that nature. And so Kuma War was supposed to be like the separate portion of this, right? But they like in the course of this, they also, you know, they had worked with the History Channel, I think, on like a dogfights game or something. The deal with that is the History Channel is almost explicitly meant to be like a Nazi apologia TV channel that was originally created to broadcast the Hearst documentary collection, right? And so Hearst himself was the character inspiration for Citizen Kane, who was a militant anti-communist. He was also one of the guys that like initially helped spread the myth about the Holodomor. And you probably know the name because of Patty Hearst, who was kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army, who then got $2 million laundered into the People's Temple through a scam that the People's Temple ran during her kidnapping. The part of the kidnapping,
People's Temple is the Jim Jones thing.
Right. Yeah. And so during the hostage negotiations, there was $2 million that was demanded to be like put out into the Oakland poor community as like aid. And so what the temple did was they would use that to buy food and then distribute the food out to their own members, who would then bring it back to them. And then a day after, they would have another event and put out the same food and redistribute that to their own members, who would then bring it back, and the cycle would go on. So then, to go into this, there was this Marine that was involved in the development of these games, right? Mr. Hekmati, who was a Iranian guy who I believe in 2011, 2012, went to go visit his grandmother in Iran. I mean, you know, he's from there, but he was a Marine that took place in the invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. Right. And, he did actually get espionage training. He worked for DARPA.
DARPA is the Defense Arms Research Project, something.
Yes, who also happened to, you know, be involved in the language learning software that Kuma Games did. So, you know, he went there, and he had been on the Iranian radar for some time, I would imagine, you know, for the work that he did surrounding this. I mean, he literally worked on like media that was like about propagandizing literal mass murder and rape of a country, right?
از پایگاه بگرام تا کابل 45 دقیقه فاصله است. من در یه مرکز جاسوسی کار میکردم که در بگرام مستقر بود. من از بگرام یه سری پرواز داشتم. یکی از اونها از خط بگرام به دبی بود. دو روز در دبی توی هتل مستقر بودم. از اونجا یه بلیط یه سری گرفتم و به تهران اومدم.
And so the deal is that there's like a flurry of news that comes out around that time about how like he was going to be sentenced to death in 2012.
His family says he went to Iran to see elderly relatives. They're now pleading for the Iranian government not to, quote, murder their son.
My name is Amir Mirzai Hekmati.
Former U.S. Marine Amir Mirzai Hekmati has apparently been sentenced to death by an Iranian court. Iran's state-run news agencies say he was convicted of working for an enemy country, and that during trial, he confessed to the motivation behind his efforts to infiltrate Iran's intelligence system as a CIA agent. The CIA referred us to the White House, which, along with the State Department, is calling on the Iranians to give Hekmati access to legal counsel, and...
We consider that the charges are a fabrication and he ought to be released.
The family previously said all he had was a government-appointed lawyer. Asked by CNN about his sentencing, Hekmati's family in Michigan would not go on camera. But in a statement, his mother said they're terrified by the news. The family denied that Amir Hekmati is a spy and said his very life is being exploited for political gain.
Turns out he got traded in 2016, I think around the time that the JCPOA was last supposed to be like upheld, right? If I'm not.
Yeah, that was, he was one of the JCPOA people.
Right. Now this is probably a pretty important guy to, you know, be involved in that. But again, he was also a Marine who had likely some heavy connections. So then in, I think, 2021, news again comes out that he was supposed to be getting a $20 million payout for being held by Iran, as, you know, like a hostage payout, right?
Yeah, they loot Iranian frozen assets.
Exactly.
They loot them and they give them to these stupid fucking people.
Exactly.
It's like pure piracy.
Now here's the kicker, the cherry on top of all of this, right? Because this dude is Iranian, there was some deal that got made about this, right? And so they kicked back and said, hey, we can't actually give you this money because you are going to Iran to sell state secrets.
Yeah.
There's so many layers of bullshit involved in this whole story, but the really like stupid fucked up.
And this
part
was like
is,
a few months.
That,
this
like,
was like a month ago, right? A month ago. Yeah, he lost his award. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like he was supposed to be like in possession of $20 million of like stolen assets, and then they said, no, you are an Iranian. Go fuck yourself.
It's crazy.
Like, that's just the real cherry of like,
they'll
what
use
it means
you and
to
then
be
toss
a,
you
like,
out. It's crazy.
Comprador. Exactly. Yep. So, yeah, no, I like that. That's my favorite story because it's so emblematic of how exactly, you know, this whole thing is just so stupid.